The topic tonight is about the influence of our surroundings and our sviva, about things that, for our children or us, how things around us influence us. So we're not going to say it inside. He brings the long pieces, the ends of the chapter from the Gra and the Rambam, the Shmona Prakim, the Gra and Mishle. He brings the entire Maracha over here about how our surroundings influence us. There are essentially three circles. There is the kochos around that a person has when they're born. There's the kochos of the hashpa, of the sviva, of your friends and family around you that influence you. And the last koach comes things that you acquire yourself. So what are kochos you get from when you're born? So people have different types of bodies, different types of heights, short, tall. People have better hearing, worse hearing. People have good memories, not as good memories. People are good with their hands, not good with their hands. These are all things that we're born with. Some children have an atiyah towards kas. Some are more calm. Some have more kinah. Some have more gaiva. These are the things that we have that we're born with, just part of our DNA. The second thing are things that we get from our surroundings and our friends around us. So a child absorbs like a sponge all types of things. All the experiences he has from the time he's born come and are mashpi on them and they influence his life. And he gathers all of them through his senses, his hearing, his sight, his touch, all these things. And depending on what he absorbs and brings in, we're on page 83. Depending on what he brings in, it will open up different kochos inside. So he gives a few examples. If a child hears music that's relaxing, so then that will, help him build a netiyah towards music. And he'll make this part of his character traits of who he is. If the child sees a lot of anger around him, so he's going to absorb anger, and he's going to become an angry child because he absorbs people who are angry and things like that. And if around him people are very sad, so he'll absorb sadness. And if the child hears his father learning Torah, then the child will observe the sounds of Torah. All the things the little child is going to have around them are going to be part of that's going to make up the well-being of the child. So then he goes on to say that the ikar hashpa zehad mehadmiyos shesoveves oso. The ikar hashpa, the ikar influence a person has, are the things that are naturally around them. It's not necessarily the shir or the class or the book he reads, but the people he hangs out with, the people around him, will influence him in the biggest way. So he says, this could be the mother, the father, the grandmother, the sister, the brother, whoever it is, the babysitter. And he says, the first thing the child sees is ima, is mother. Mother is the first thing, how she holds him, and how she calms him, and how she feeds him. And he absorbs all of these images of his mother. And that's really the first influence the child's going to have in his life, is to the mother. And then he goes on to say, it's very chashuv. He says the most important ages that influence the child that he absorbs is 3 to 4. 3 to 4 has the biggest influence in how the child is going to soak up like a sponge all of those things. And he says he talks about when you choose a babysitter, when you choose a daycare, things like that. That's the age of 3 or 4. Those times are going to be very influential. And these are things you have to decide. And is it going to be positive? And these are things you have to weigh very seriously. I think he's speaking from a psychological perspective. He doesn't give anything like that. He just says those are the ages that are most influential. He says when you choose a babysitter or a nanny or things like that, he feels the best as someone who's a mother herself, because she has already these mothering qualities, and she'll know how to to calm and to treat the child in a particular way, and she'll have that motherly feeling. And he says sometimes there are babysitters and sometimes there are influences. There are, nannies, daycare centers who they want to work more on, vacuuming, and they just put a pacifier in the kid's mouth and, tell him to be quiet. So you want to make sure the person who's with the child at the time is someone who's going to influence them in a proper, calming, positive way. And he talks about modern psychology. And he says in the last 100 years, people understand much better about the sviva and the influences around them when a person is born, in the first years, in the hashpa, and have designed the character traits of a child. So he talks about a study in America that the child was born, and they took some children, and the children went out, they had parents who worked. Half of the children, so they had a French nanny until about half a year. And the other half of the children had another nanny of a different nationality, but nothing particularly special about the way she spoke. And then the children went to school, and then in high school they took those kids and they put them in French class, and the children who had the French nanny, who only had for half a year and they were little kids, they picked up French twice as fast as everybody else. That was a hashpah from a young age, and it influenced them. And that's the power of how much the hashpah has around us, influencing the children. And he tells a story. He told this to Rav Chaskel Sarna, the Rosh Yeshiva Chevron, and he was Nora Hasragesh. He thought that was incredible. And he said that until this time, he understood the reason why Rav Yossi's mother brought him to the Beis Medrash was like Inyan Skuli. It was like a skula. Bring the kids to the Beis Medrash, this little baby, you know, I'm sure it'll be good for him later on. But now he sees that really, even a child, you bring him to the Beis Medrash, understands a Kol Tefillah, Kol Torah, all of those things will have a major influence on the child later on. Then he brings a Yerushalmi. This is the Yerushalmi that I sent out the other day. So you all have it on your phones. So the Yerushalmi in Ksuvus. The Yerushalmi in Ksuvus, Perakei, Halacha Vav. And it tells the following story. It says that there are a number of Amoraim who describe the first things that they can recall. The machlokas here was regarding about making a neder and whether the neder is chal and certain things regarding divorce. So it says here in the Yerushalmi in Ksuvus that Shmuel said that he remembers the nurse who was there when he came out of his mother's womb. Okay, and Yeshua ben Levi said he remembers the Moel. Ooh. And Rav Yochanan says he remembers the women who were in the room around when he was born, and his mother passed away when he was born, and he remembers the women who were caring for her and them, and he remembers all of those things. This is in Yerushalmi and Ksuvus and Perakei. So they remember all of these things. And so what do we see from here again? That the Gemara is telling us that there is influence from a young age on the child, in the trajectory and impacting the child itself.
Are they saying they're able to enter, like they're able to get into a certain part of the memory?
Something, yes. There's some part of the memory.
It's there, we just don't know.
Exactly, 100%. So then he says as follows, that every single person is born with a certain teva, the koach they have. And he either identifies this in his surroundings, and he takes this and makes it a part of his own personality. And the nature of a person is built in this tzura, in this way, that he doesn't want to be different. We always want to mix in with the crowd. That's the nature of people. We want to mix in with people around us. And there's two types of people who deal with things in the opposite way, things that are contradictory. People go in extremes who don't want to mix in. There's two categories of people who don't want to mix in. He says the first people who don't want to mix in are Iluyim, geniuses. Iluyisha children, Iluyisha young people, adults, they do their own thing, they don't care what anybody says, they have their own shita, they're geniuses, they're brilliant, they don't really care about the people around them. And the other thing he says are people with special needs. Children with special needs are also not influenced or interested in what people around them are doing. And he says those are two extremes. But that's not necessarily the norm. Most people want to mix in with people around them. So he says that regarding creating one's identity, a person wants to have the koach to open up and to learn new things, and this is what makes a person into a ben adam when they learn new things. He says, how do you teach a child aleph beis? He says, he sees his kid friend next to him, that he knows it, and he wants to know it as well, right? A kid doesn't read. But what happens? He sees the older brother, the older sister, I want to do that as well. He sees the other brother is playing basketball. I also want to do that. We're influenced about the people around us in what they're doing and how they're doing it. And he wants to have friends as well in that way. And at a young age, people learn to act this way, to approach, to know how to identify with older people. We always want to be like adults, right? The child puts on his daddy's glasses and he takes his briefcase, and the child puts on the mother's shoes, and she wants to be a mommy also. All these things, we want to be bigger, we want to surround ourselves by the people around us. And la'at la'at, slowly, we gather, we make these things part of who we are, we make it part of our personality. And he gives an example. He says a young child, you tell him he shouldn't go around naked, right? Tell a little kid who doesn't want to wear his diaper, doesn't wear his pants, you shouldn't go naked. He doesn't understand why. He doesn't see why he shouldn't want to walk around without his diaper on. He thinks it's fun. He does this. Why is the kid stopped doing it? Because you told him not to do it, right? It's not because he's like, oh, I don't know, maybe it's not appropriate, I'm not wearing pants. Like, that's not what the kid is thinking. The kid doesn't wear pants when he's 4 years old because you told him it's not appropriate to do that.
But you told him it's a social environment?
No, yeah. So because you told him. But only at the age of 5. He says, Begil Chamesh. So he's not going to go out by himself naked. Most cases, our kids are not going to go out running around naked without clothing.
When
they're 3, they will. But you're going to tell them, don't do that. It's not appropriate. You don't want them to call child services, all types of things like that. You know, it's not appropriate. But at a certain age, what happens? At a certain age, it's like, oh, wait a second. Everybody's wearing clothing. Like, maybe I shouldn't do this. But at a young age, he's not going to chop. But at a certain age, he begins to chop, and he's embarrassed. And he knows that it's different. So the day there's the switching of mom and daddy told me not to do this, even though I don't understand why, because it seems like a lot of fun. And then around the age of 5, he's like, oh, that's embarrassing. I should probably wear pants. Something changes because he cares, and he's looking around the people. He's looking at the people around him. The reason changes.
Meaning, even if you, for lack of a better term, made the argument to the child that like you don't see Poppy walking around like that,
he doesn't care.
If that's true.
If that's true.
In other words, at 3 you have to say
we just don't do it.
At 5 you have to say this isn't appropriate.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. So a child takes him from his surroundings. He adapts all these things to who he is, and becomes la'at. He's a sponge who absorbs from his sviva. So he says that regarding creating one's identity, he says the parents need to be machanach them. They have to work to create the child's identity, and they have to guide him, and they have to direct him, and they have to tell him who to identify with, and that's part of children's friends. Who are their friends? Who influences them? The role of the parents is to kind of, you know, it becomes more complicated. Teenagers, you know, and they want to have their own personality, but the role of the parents is to kind of like set up a little bit and try to like from afar, who are the people who are going to be influencing our children? And who are they going to be hanging out with? And who's going to affect their approach to life and creating their identity? Who are the playdates with? You know, who are they going to see? All these things are important in kind of managing, not too heavy-handedly, but a little bit, you know, from afar, but not too far, who is influencing our child and who's around them. He says many times you don't need to say anything, but you can do it through the way you act, and he'll absorb that. It's not imitation, he says, but it's simply part of creating his own personality. And he says, ki hu machshiv oscha. Your child is machshiv you. You might not think it, but your child is machshiv you. He looks at what you're doing, he looks at how you're acting, she sees how you conduct yourself, and that influences in creating their personality. So he says, Rav Avram Grzhensky. Oh, we were talking about the Torah of Avram the other day. Good. So Rav Avram Grzhensky explained. It says, La'olam te daito shel adam mu'reves im habrios, that a person should act in a way of people around him, should be socially acceptable and socially normal with people around him. And he says, why is that? He said, because when you are socially normal and acceptable, you can be mashpia other people. But if you're not socially normal, then you're not going to influence anybody around you because you're going to be odd and weird and no one's going to want to talk to you. People don't identify with you, then you can't have a hashpa on them. But if you are normal and socially acceptable, then you're able to be mashpia on other people. That's the pshat. L'olam te'adai te'adam mu'revis embryos. What? The Gemara is just telling you, the Mishnah is just telling you, be a nice guy so you're not a weirdo? We don't need to know that. Well, hopefully we know that enough. If you want to have influence on people, if you're working in the workplace and you want to get, you know, that colleague who like could really light a menorah for Hanukkah or would really appreciate Purim, something like that, and you want to get them to have some sort of connection with them, mashpia on them in a positive way, then act like a normal person, not like a weirdo. And you'll have a greater hashpa on them if you are, they can identify. This leads to the piece in the Chaykal Yitzhak that we sent out the other day. What does that have to do with this? The point is as follows. The Medrash says that Avram Avinu had a whole big deal on whether he should do Bris Milah or not. And the Chaykal Yitzhak, he says over here by the well, the Chaykal Yitzhak on the side, why this is a Chassidish Sefer, it's the Sfinker Rav, for the Holocaust. Why is this in Rosh Lomo Hoffman's, you know, Sviva? Why is that in his, you know, area? So his father, Rosh Lomo Hoffman's father, was very close with the Sfinker Rav, and he had a very big kesher to his Sfarim. So that's why he brought this piece. And it says, Dehat Sadik Harotza Lahochiach Espene Doro, Tsarch Shiabo Gamking Tsas Nidnore Maise Hadar. He has to be like the generation. Vazayucha Lahochicham Lekarvim Latorah. Then you can bring the Torah. Avimhu Naki Bli Chait Klal. Again, we're not saying the Tzaddik should sin. But if the Tzaddik seems too far away, it doesn't seem relatable at all. Einam mischaber mimo lekabel tochachato. They're not going to accept his tochacha. Kein maimer chazal lama lo niskayma malchus shol b'mnei shalo bo shum dofi kamuvan. How come the malchus of Shol didn't last? Because Shol was too perfect until he had his episode at the end of his life. But he was above everybody. When it says he was, the pasuk says he was rosho, he was ahead above everybody else. Not just in height, but he was a big, much bigger tzaddik than anybody else. He couldn't connect to the people. David was a bit of a chevraman. David connected to people. People got David. David got people. That's why he was more miskabel, so the tzibur. But Shaul was above everybody. So this is the same point as well. If you want to be mashpi on people, you got to be normal to them. You have to feel they can relate. Again, I don't think that means lowering your standards. If the people you want to influence want to go to the bar, I don't think you should go to the bar. You shouldn't go to the bar. But you have to act in a way that they feel in some way they can relate and understand you if you want to have a shpah.
What was he saying by Avram on the bottom of that piece?
So the he says, Uvezei Yevor HaMedrash, Sha'amar Avram Ad Shalom Melasi, Hayubayin Mizdavgin Li. He says, well, before I had a bris mila, people thought I was normal. But now I'm going to be the only guy in the world without a bris mila. I could teach them. Tomar Shemilasi Hein Boyin Mizdavgin Li, B'tmiya. They're gonna come and they're not gonna want to be friends. Ha'ainli shum his chabusimam. V'amrlo kadosh baruch hu dayech sheni alkecha alfa pi shalom bisparsem alchusay dayech levan. Says Hashem, I'll take care of it. Don't worry, but you do what I have to do. I'll take care of the rest.
What was the answer, by the way? What was the answer?
What's
it coming to address?
This, the medrash. He's coming to discuss the medrash that says that Avram Avinu didn't want to have bris mila because it says. This is really the next part. It says, Belo Ne Mamre. Why is he in the fields of Mamre? Because Mamre gave him advice about should he do the Bris Mila, Mila. It's that whole discussion as well. Oh. But that was Avram's concern.
Yes, it's a famous question. Avram, all the others knew the whole Torah, right? Yeah. They intuited the Torah, right?
Okay.
That was their,
yeah.
So apparently there's a big shaila is why Avram didn't realize that he should have a Bris Mila.
Yeah.
This is why Hashem would ask you. It's a big mitzvah.
There's always a question.
This would answer that.
Correct. He knew Hashem wasn't going to ask to eat matzah. Yeah.
So there's always a question that people ask about. You know, it says that Avram Avinu was Megayer. A ton of people. What happened to those people?
Yeah.
So I was wondering if this was coming to answer that.
So, after it could be. After
the Mila, they couldn't relate to.
Well, that's what I was about to ask. It's like, if we're saying that,
I thought they also did.
In order to do Kira,
way more people
relate to that. Avram Avinu would have been those on the list.
Because of what?
Because he all of a sudden is now keeping all the mitzvahs and he's totally separated himself from the class.
Uh-huh. So it wasn't the bris mila apparently didn't make such a big deal. What we do find, I heard this once. I asked for a marmako more, but we couldn't find it. I heard this once from Refiner. Refiner said that he saw it a safer. But then he couldn't remember or find where the safer was. Yeah. So yeah, I know. So he said that when Avram went to Sheikh Yitzchak, that there's some Marimakim that says Avram went to Sheikh Yitzchak, then that he lost everybody. The Nisayon wasn't just Shechting his son. The Nisayon is that Avram, for the last 50 years, you've been telling us, don't have human slaughter. And you are mamish doing lehevach everything. No. Right. And the Nisayon was that, yes, even so, he lost everyone, he did the Ratzon Hashem. That was the Nisayon. He lost all of his kirov work.
But still Yeshiva Shem Ever.
That's different. Yeshiva Shem Ever is not Avram.
But that disappeared.
What?
That disappeared.
Shiva Shem Ever didn't disappear. Yaakov learned some Shiva Shem Ever.
Yeah, but Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
And anything was gone.
Correct.
Israel.
Correct. But so the other the
we say that The Lurie is only those, the Bnei Yisrael, those that came from
Mitzrayim. Took it all down.
What happened to all those learned people?
So I saw there's a drasha from Rav Avigdor Amiel. Rav Avigdor Amiel was the Rav of Tel Aviv before 1948. So he says B'yasa nefesh asher asu b'chara means that what Avram and Sarah did is they showed people that they're a nefesh, that they're godly. He wasn't preaching Torah, mitzvahs, things like that. What he brought to the world, that still exists. What he brought to the world is that you're not just flesh and blood, that you're godly, that you have a neshama, that you could reach higher. And that stayed. That stayed. Because monotheism and religion, things like that.
Hashem,
he taught them...
And that's just Jewish.
Correct. He taught them, not even... He taught them that you have a lofty neshama, that you have something more to you. That's what he taught them.
So yeah. We know we do this forever.
Yeah.
But there's a diak in the pasuk where it says numerous times that Avraham Avinu built up his bath. One of the kashas I saw once was, but it never says that he shechted anything. By Adam, Noach, we find they brought karbanis. It says that Avraham built up his bath. We knew where the karbanis. So I was thinking once that, no, because his whole point was to show people there's an Hashem. There's somebody to serve. My purpose is not to get you to actually go and serve, but I'm here to show you that
there's something to do.
And then the mizbech is a makom to avoda.
Going back to the thing we just mentioned, is this the reason why you hear a lot where guy younger generation they want a rav that they could relate to?
Okay, so no, we're not paused. But let me tell you this. I forgot also who I saw this from as well. I have to go back and look. The other answer to Esanefesh Asher Asu B'charan is that when Yitzchak became the Rebbe after Avram passed away, the mamash is a different mahalach, right? Avram was chesed and there was kumzitzes and there was like chalms every night. It was very different. And Yitzchak became the Rebbe and it was davening and din and gvura. It was very different. And all of the chassidim, all the talmid of Avram Avinu, they said, ooh, no, this is not for us. And they went and did their own. They said, we don't need a Rebbe anymore. We had from Avram, we had a Rav, and we're fine. And they went off and they did their own thing. And what happened is that without a Rav, even if the Rav's not perfect, even if the Rabbi is not exactly what you want it to be, but without somebody leading, you're not going to last. They all withered out. All SNF, they all went away. Because they said, if it's not going to be the Rabbi we want perfectly the way I design it, and everything I hope, and everything I dream, and everything I'm comfortable with, then like better I not have a Rav, and they all disappeared. Instead of having a Yitzchak Avinu as to be the Rebbe.
My question is more on what Rabbi Hoffman said, specifically on the people want someone to relate, not too far away from them.
Yeah.
If their Rav doesn't have a smartphone, for argument's sake, and then starts talking against smartphones, like owning a smartphone.
So I have a comment. I'll share it afterwards. Okay. Good? I have a comment. Okay, we'll share it afterwards. Okay. So he... fine. So he says... again, so back over here, he says that the person has different circles around him. The first is... Oh, no, sorry. We're back over here, yeah. Again, the first is... The first is that... The kochos he has from he's born. The second, what he absorbs from his natural surroundings. And the third is what he gives to himself. The second thing, the hashpav, the svivav, people around him, that makes his identification, age 3 to 4, it's part of his design, all these things. The third one, what the person grows into his own, that comes from meeting different types of people. And a person, a kid walks into a class of 30 kids, each one has a different part of who they are. Then he has to begin to figure out where he holds himself and make his own decisions and all of those things. But that's not his discussion right now. Let's talk about what a person brings in from when he's born. He says, what a person brings in from when he's born is bekoach. It's all potential. But now the question is, how do you open up that potential and activate it? So it depends on the surroundings and his influences and how it opens up. He says, sometimes the surroundings are in a positive way, and it brings out good things. And sometimes they cause not so nice things around him. So he says, for example, you could have a child who's born with a tendency towards anger, okay? But the people around him are very calm. So what happens? He teaches himself how to calm himself down, and he never opens up the angry part of who he is because the people around him influence in a calm way. On the other hand, you have a child who's born very, very calm, and the people around him are fiery and angry, and everybody's yelling and screaming. what happens? They're mashpia on him to be more angry. So no matter how the child is born, the sviva around him is going to influence him in a certain way. He says, what happens from, it changes from house to house. He says, let's say you have a child who doesn't wash his hands. So they scream at him, how come you don't wash your hands? You know, or you could say to him, did you wash your hands? There's a way to do it. You're going to open up different kochos depending on how you're going to address that child. A child, you know, is sitting on a bus and there's an elderly person. So the child, you know, should get up. There are some mothers who will tell them, you know, tell the child, I paid for your seat, sit down. Why are you getting up? And some mothers will say, oh, no, you have a zaken here, an older person, sit up. All of those things are going to be opened up by the people around him. But it's going to impact how he's going to go forward. And this is in every single thing, every situation. The child absorbs and is influenced by the sviva around him naturally, and it can cause to open up different kochos, positive or negative. On the other way, you could have positive kochos that are never opened up, or positive kochos that are shut down, negative kochos that are never come out, or negative kochos that are shut down, all depending on the influence around him. And this is chinuch. We mentioned this two times ago. Chinuch means opening up the natural tendencies the child has. Chinuch is not instructing, sit here, don't sit there, stand here, don't stand here, study harder, don't study, whatever it is. Chinuch is taking what the child has and opening it up in a positive way. The hashpah of the sviva is not formal education, but it definitely is part of the education of a child and things we have to be on top of and things we have to be aware of in our own, with our children. So he tells a story over here that when he got engaged, so Rav Meir Chadash, who was the Mashgiach in Chevron, was a Rebbe in Chevron, was very upset at him. Why? Because Shlomo Hoffman married a family, a young lady who was from a German family. And they had totally different hashkafa, Tarim Daracheretz, Rav Hirsch. And he said, you're from a Lithuanian yeshivish family. You're marrying a Yaki family. It's mamish like it's Kalayim over here. How could you marry such a person like this? She's, you know, she said, Ha'imesh ishti lo tishlach es ha'ayel yeshiva. She didn't go to yeshiva. She's not familiar. You shouldn't marry such a person. So I went to Rav Chaskel Sarna, he said. And I told Rav Chaskel Sarna the following thing. He said that the Sridi Yesh, Rav Chilya Yaakov Weinberg, was my wife's babysitter. And how did that happen? So he said, when Rav Chaskel Sarna heard this, he gave Rav Shlomo Hoffman a kiss, and he said, now I understand why it's a good shidduch over here. And he says, if Rechil Yaakov Weinberg was the girl's babysitter, then it's going to be good, it's going to be fine, you should continue. And he tells a story that his father-in-law was like a printer, and he was printing Rechil Yaakov Weinberg's chidushim, and when he was printing the svarim, the deal was, I have to leave the house at night to print the svarim, you'll watch my kids. And that's how it worked out. He was the babysitter. So the point was, is that, it worked out and everyone was happy. And that was the hashpah. What? Yeah, that was worked out. Okay, good. So then he says that by chinuch, you can open things up. You can choose to not open things up. It's all about the surroundings around the person. And we're just going to come in a moment to the conclusion here. And he says you could open up the positive kochos. For example, a child has a chush for good hearing, right? Has a good ear, musically inclined, can hear things well. But the father sings like a dying cow. So is the kid ever going to know that he has a chush, that he has something, that he's a good ear to be able to sing beautifully? He's never going to know. Because his whole life, grew up with his father butchering Zmiros and Shabbos, and nothing was good. Like so what's going to be with this kid? He's never going to know about this. But if he would know that he had a good chush, a good feeling to sing and to hear music, then I would tell him, get the kid lessons, things like that. We want to open up what's there. And sometimes you could have tremendous abilities and tremendous kochos, but it never happens. They never realize what the kid has a potential of. And he doesn't have these opportunities. And therefore, you have to find a way how to open it up and how to get these kochos if you see something there within your kid. And you have to give, also, in the negative kochos, well, you have to, kind of give the opportunity to not grow. He gives an example. Let's say somebody knocks on the door and wants tzedakah. So the father immediately runs to get money, and the kid sees the father, and he says, asks him how he can give, and he gives the money, and he identifies, oh, my father gives tzedakah, it's a very chashuv thing. So the child, no, was never told to give tzedakah, but the child saw the father running to give the money, asking the person if he could give him a drink, you know, extending himself, and he didn't say a word to your kid for 18 years about giving tzedakah. You didn't have to say a word, because it was obvious and clear exactly what it should be. Okay? On the other hand, you have a father who's a kamtzan, who, you know, runs away when somebody knocks on the door, and the kid gets all the messages he needs about tzedakah. You'd have to say a word. But whenever he might have had the potential to be a tremendously generous and giving person, but all he saw from his father is, I can't, I won't, and he never had those abilities opened up for him. And therefore you have to guide, move away the kochos that are not going to be so good, and open up the kochos that are going to be good. Sinna, all these types of terrible things we want to avoid. He talks about child loves kavod, okay? So you can teach a child, everyone, you see the child loves kavod. He loves being acknowledged and respect and being put on a pedestal. So you can do it through playing sports. He talks about soccer here. He could put him on a pedestal and kavod by excelling at sports. Or he could do it through kavod for a mitzvah. He could feel mechubadik by doing a mitzvah as well. Seeing what the children have and opening up in a positive way and giving him the right direction in the right place. Talks about these are the points that he's making. He just concludes over here. Va'anachnu hamechanachem, we the educators, trichel menso derech, eich linaveit, how to navigate es hakochos shelo, his kochos, shisapek v'kabel osam betzura chiyuvos, in a positive and a really wonderful way. Now again, he has more to say over here about the Rambam and the Grub, but let's just tell the story he says over here, the Rav Isaac Sher, and the Hashpa of the Sviva, and then we'll draw to a close. Geshmak story. He says Rav Isaac Sher was always against Rav Kook. Always against Rav Kook and his Zionism. He was Eish Lahava against it. He was not a fan. So he says one time he was in a Vad, and someone asked him, you know, how is it that... he asked one of the people in the Vad, why do you read these Sfarim if the yeshiva is against it? So he told him, because there's so many beautiful chidushim in Rav Kook, I really connect to it. So he said, Mimarav Shach, I understand. He said, if Rav Kook is saying something good, so then Rav Tzadok HaKohen already said it. Rav Tzadok, it's all Rav Tzadok. And he says, if Rav Tzadok didn't say it himself, then it's a simen that it's not a good thing to say. So just the Rav Tzadok, I don't know Rav Kook. That's what Rav Isaac Sher said. Fine. So then he said, one time I was sitting by Rav Isaac Sher with Rav Eliezer Dvartz. Rav Eliezer Dvartz was a gevalga Talmud Chacham. He was nifter at a young age. They published on his chedushim, but he was a big Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Isaac Sher started to say, he said, after the war in Slobodka, would you come back to me to Slobodka? I want to go back to Slobodka. I want to go, you know, visit there. So Rav Eliezer Dvartz said, no. How can I leave it to Chutz Laretz? So Rav Isaac Sher said, it's going to learn better in Slobodka. We should go back to Europe. We should shtag there. So afterwards, Rav Isaac Sher said, I see that you're all infected by Zionism. I see that you all have the case of Zionism. So I said to my Rebbe, not one time did I read Rav Kook's works. How can you say I'm infected by this? So he started to laugh and he said, the Gemara says that mushrooms, they grow from the air. You don't have to plant a mushroom. It all grows through spores in the air. So he says, you think you need to read a book to be infected by the ideas of the book? He says, the whole land of Israel is filled with Zionism. You can't go there. Zionism is everywhere. And you absorb it just by being here. And you don't even realize it. So he said that even if you knew, how do I know this? Because I'm telling you that even if you knew that you would shtag better in Chutz Laretz, and your learning would be better, you would tell me, I can't leave Eretz Yisrael. How do I know that? It's because of Zionism. He says, before Zionism, you would have said that, you would have gone. Okay. We're not debating here. We're telling the story. We're not debating here, yes or no. We're telling the story.
We're debating the halacha of leaving Eretz Yisrael.
We're not debating anything here. I'm good. So, fine. And then he tells the following. He said, the whole point, what's his point? What was this point to relevant to us? The atmosphere. The atmosphere. You grow up in a place. Even if you don't read a single book, you don't see a single person, you just grow up in a place, it's going to affect you positively or negatively. In this case, it was Zionism he felt was affecting negatively. Even though I didn't read a single word from any, Tzioni author. But they became a part of living in Eretz Yisrael to the extent that they would have, you know, perhaps, in his opinion, sacrificed the learning for the sake of being in Eretz Yisrael. And then this is not related to the story at all, but it's a geschmack story. Then he says that Rav Isaac Sher one time went with his wife to Tveria for a few days for refuah, some sort of medical thing. And he asked me, Rav Shlomo Hoffman, and another bachar, to go and check on his apartment to make sure everything was okay, because he was going to be away for some time to make sure everything was beseder. So we went into his apartment, and we were curious. So we were very curious, and we wanted to know which svarim did Rav Isaac Sher have by his nightstand. So they went into his room, and they looked by his nightstand, and they found three svarim. Ready? Mesilas Yesharim, Shari Kedusha, and Oros HaTshuva of Rav Kook. Okay? A year later, they were in the middle of a vad with the best bachur in the yeshiva, and a bachur started to really go at Rav Isaac Sher. Why is the Rosh Yeshiva against Rav Kook all the time? Why are you fighting so much with Rav Kook? What's the big deal? So the Rosh Yeshiva didn't even read one word of Rav Kook. How does he know there's something wrong with Rav Kook? So if you would have read his svarim, if you would have read Rav Kook's svarim, you wouldn't be so against it. So Isaac Sher became very serious, and he took his finger, and he pointed at me and the other bachur who I went to check on the apartment. And he said, you ask Rav Shlomo Hoffman and this other bachur if I read the svarim of Kook. So they started to blush. They turned bright red. And they said, how did he possibly know that we read, that we looked into his room? How did he possibly know? So Rav Shlomo Hoffman said that you think that Rav Isaac Sher was a Baal Mofes, he had Ruach HaKodesh. But it's Pashut, no. He said he was a brilliant mechanech, and he knew for sure that if he let us into his apartment, without a doubt, we were going to go look what he had by his bed and check out his farm, and he was 100% on the dot. Okay? Good.